I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 106 of Season 6 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is award-winning documentary director, writer, and everything that you need to be done when you're making a documentary, Dana Nachman. Welcome back, Dana.
Thank you. I love this movie. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that, you know, maybe today, maybe in a few days, you know, we'll get your history of this movie. We'll figure that out. So minute 106 begins with George starting to notice a whole bunch of differences of what's going on, and ends with a man taking a look at a tree. So we ended things yesterday with the whole idea that, Clarence finally thought about what he's going to do in order to help prove to George that his life means something to him, or means something to everyone, basically. And, you know, he tells him, okay, you were never born. You don't exist. And George has a little trouble believing it and stuff like that. And at this point, you know, George just starts looking around and goes, what's happening? It's not stopped snowing out here, didn't it? Well, I what happened here? What I need is a couple good stiff drinks. How about you, Angel? You want a drink? So my first question here is that, how does the fact that George doesn't exist change the weather?
I know. I was just thinking the same thing.
that's just a crazy thing to think about. It's understandable that if George doesn't exist, there will be changes in the people, but I don't think nature should really be changed by the fact that, you know, George not having anything, not being around, shouldn't be something that's going to change what the weather's like. I mean, we've already looked into the fact that there actually was no snow on December 24th, 1945. So in upstate New York. So, you know, we know that didn't really happen.
But right. That's funny.
So maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's bringing us into reality. You know, George doesn't exist in reality. So in reality, there was no snow. So you can look at it from that perspective, maybe.
You're getting very deep now.
We always get deep, don't we? Isn't that the point?
Yes, very.
Exactly. You know, he starts making Clarence like chuckle a little bit because Clarence is having fun. You know, as far as Clarence is concerned, I mean, this is something that, you know, when looking at the idea, you know, you need someone like Clarence who is simple-minded, you know, to be able to actually, first of all, think of this type of idea. You know, he's not looking into it as deep as we are.
Right.
You know, exactly. He's just amused by the fact that George is actually, you know, looking at what's, you know, he likes seeing how George is starting to see the way that things are starting to change around him.
Maybe he likes it because he's not usually like one up on people, and now he's one up on him, you know, he's because he's simple minded. So now he has the opportunity to know what's going on where slowly, you know, the truth is coming.
Oh, wow. That actually makes sense. I didn't even think about it from that perspective. That's actually very interesting. I mean, they did say that he has, the mind of a rabbit, but the faith of a child. I think that's how they referred to him. Yeah. So, okay. I can sort of see that. you know, I can sort of see that, you know, that a child.
It's a good assignment.
Yes, it definitely is. I think a child looking at everything going on will see things, you know, they always say that children see things in a purer way. So maybe that's the idea that, you know, Clarence is the type of angel who's a pure angel because he's very simple, and therefore he can look at the situation and actually see things.
Yeah. I like it. That's why I like kids.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Okay, this is a great segue. Why don't you tell me your history with this movie?
Oh, well, I don't even remember when I last saw it. I mean, when I first saw it. But when I last saw it is a really cool thing. So I live in Los Altos, California, which is in the middle of Silicon Valley. And there's an amazing theater here called the Stanford Theater. And I think it's owned by the Packard family, I think, like Lucille Packard. And it's a nonprofit theater, old, I looked it up, but, you know, from beautiful old theaters. And it runs like a nonprofit. They charge like $8 for two movies, double feature. And every Christmas they do, on Christmas Eve, they do It's a Wonderful Life. It's not a double feature that one night, usually it is. But they have different showings, and I've always wanted to go, and I've never been able to go for various reasons. One, which we could get to later, is that I've been shooting a Christmas movie and series for the last, like, since 2019. Right. So I'm very busy around Christmas time shooting my movie. And but this year we were shooting it, actually. But on Christmas Eve, I was home. I was done shooting by then. And we went, and it was so amazing. It was, it sells out. I don't know how big the theater is, but very, very big. It has a balcony. It's humongous, and it was totally sold out. And we got there like maybe 10 minutes before it started, and we had to sit in the very back. So it was just really, and they give free popcorn. It's just the cutest thing. And we saw it there, and I'd never seen it with a theater full of people. They have an organ playing ahead of time. I mean, it was magnificent. I think anybody who's a huge fan of this should make a trek out here to go to this. It's such an amazing event.
Well, if you send me really tickets, I'll come and see it with you next year.
Okay. Gladly. That's
I meant plane tickets, not tickets to the movie.
Oh, no.
The movie's on me, plane tickets on you. How's that?
Oh, no. But you know, one thing that happened during this, which I thought it was kind of crazy. I only thought of it right before this, but I had to sit in the back. I mean, number one, because we were late. And number two, my mom was in a wheelchair and we sat where the wheelchair could go in. And halfway through the movie, a homeless person had come in and was kind of making a little bit of a ruckus behind us. And she she was eating the free popcorn, and it was making me a little like nervous for some reason. You know, I was just a little on edge about it. But then it occurred to me, like, she was getting in from the cold and she was eating free popcorn and she was laughing at the movie. And it was actually so lovely for her to have this nice experience around Christmas time too. It was pretty touching.
Oh, wow.
And this movie. Yeah. Anyway.
Wow. That's really cool. That's a great experience. I mean, again, this is not a movie that I've seen in the theater. I've seen it, you know, dozens of times, tens of times, however you want to call it, but I've never seen it in a not even in an empty theater. I've never seen it in a crowded theater for sure. So that's really cool that you're able to find the time. But again, even though, I mean, I know that you're filming your shows, but you know, on Christmas Eve, I don't think you're going to be working anyway. So it's just, I guess, a question of where you are at that time. You know, if you're around home.
No, sometimes I am working on Christmas Eve. Like we shot on Christmas Day for the film, actually, because the movie is about letters that get sent to Santa and them getting their gifts. And so we have shot on Christmas before, we've shot on Christmas Eve before. It's just, you know, some years it just doesn't work out. You know, we have to have find Jewish crew everywhere that isn't celebrating, and so that works for me.
Okay. Why not?
And, you know, doesn't
I'm not against
doesn't
that
always work. Yeah, it doesn't always work. So yeah, I mean, we do shoot on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Right.
If the story warrants.
Right. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
Now, I just figured that most people wouldn't want to be filmed on those days. That was what was going through my mind about that. But
you know,
I guess
the crazy thing, I've come across this in my years of doing this. Before I was a filmmaker, I was a journalist. When I was a journalist, one of the first things I had to do was MOS, they call it, which is man on the street interviews. And I was so nervous to go interview people, like just go up to them and say, hey, could we answer my questions? Because I thought people would say, get out of my face, you know? But the crazy thing about film is everybody wants to be, like 9 times out of 10 people say yes to whatever you ask. It's the weirdest thing, because I wouldn't. Like if somebody asked me on our, like, you know, I don't celebrate Christmas, but if I were to, and somebody asked me, could you come shoot at my house on Christmas? I'd be like, you know, no, but people say yes all the time. It's really weird.
Well, it's, I guess it's the idea that people want to be able to feel the fame.
You know? I think that, and I think people just legitimately like to tell their own story. I think that's what I've come to over all these years. People do like the fame and they think it's fun, but I think people like to tell their story, even if it's a hard story. I think it's therapeutic. And I think people like it.
Right.
I think it comes.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, again, when you were talking about doing man on street interviews, so it reminded me of the, you know, Jay Leno doing his jaywalking, and those are things that people shouldn't be responding to, because most of them just come off really, sounding really stupid.
I know. And they do still. It's crazy. I mean, it's really nuts. I mean, oftentimes, I mean, people know if they're concerned about it, they look up my work and they can see that we do very nice work and we treat people nicely. But even when you don't, I mean, all these shows that, you know, like people doing dumb things, they continue to do it.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend that was once interviewed for jaywalking, and apparently she knew all the answers. So she just, they didn't air her.
They cut it.
Yeah. You know, she was cut. She was like, but I knew the answers. And like, but that's not what they want to see.
That's not the point.
They want to see, how stupid people are. And they don't want to see smart people, you know? So
that makes people feel badly.
Yeah, I guess so. So back to It's a Wonderful Life, you know, after George is not taking this thing very seriously either. I mean, he's not really sure what Clarence is at this point. He's not 100% believing. He's somewhat inebriated, possibly. You know, we had this debate 2 weeks ago or last week about whether he's just, you know, discombobulated or whether he's inebriated. I think the conclusion pretty much is he's probably a little bit drunk, at least, you know, from his, and he's just saying all he needs now is even more to drink, you know, maybe. And he's already decided that he doesn't want to kill himself. So, you know, he's not trying to drink himself to death. You know, he's not doing a Leaving Las Vegas. All he wants to do now is maybe just maybe forget about what's going on. I think that's more, you know, what's the phrase? You know, people drink to drown out their sorrows or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. It doesn't actually make sense, because if he's trying to make it so he's less confused, drinking is not the way to do it. But
I agree. But you know, we're trying to analyze what George is doing.
Yeah, he's not in a good state of mind. He's not thinking clearly.
No, definitely not. And especially since he's like offering Clarence a drink. You know, he's like he's pandering to Clarence, saying, "Okay, you're an angel. No problem. You want a drink? You know, maybe."
Yeah.
Maybe you'll disappear if you take a drink. I don't know. Or if I start drinking, maybe you'll disappear. I don't know. Yeah. And, you know, simple-minded Clarence just laughs at this. And then George goes, come on, as soon as these clothes of ours are dry, which we talked a little bit about earlier in this week, that Clarence started getting dressed. I mean, his stuff and the book, too, they dried really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they must have a really, really powerful fire there that's going to be able to, you know, to dry pages of a book faster than cloth, you know, the clothes that they're wearing or his underwear, which he was putting back on, or undergarment, I guess you can say. And then Clarence says to him, but these clothes are dry. And George touches the clothes and goes, what do you know about that then? Stove's hotter than I thought.
Yeah.
So again, you know, he's still in denial. He's just thinking to himself, okay, maybe it's just really hot here. Maybe that's what it is. You know, I guess he sort of doesn't realize that he's talking with someone from heaven and not someone from hell. You know, someone from hell, then it would be much hotter, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he says to Clarence, now, come on, get your clothes on. will stroll up to my car and get, I'll stroll. You fly. I can't fly. I haven't got my wings. So again, George is making fun of Clarence, but Clarence is taking him very seriously by the way that he's responding to all of this.
Well, a lot rides on this for him.
Yes. For sure. Well, George doesn't know that, you know.
Right.
And you'd think that in most movies, this type of information would be secretive. You know, he doesn't need to tell someone that in order to get his wings, he needs to, you know, finish this or accomplish this mission or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Then, but Clarence likes to constantly remind us and George, you know, that he doesn't have wings. You know, he keeps saying that. He goes, "You haven't got your wings." Yeah, that's right. So George just, you know, all right, I forgot you don't have your wings. So okay,
right.
Let's just move on. And then we get a scene swipe, and now we see the two of them, you know, walking on a road. Did you look at the way George has his arm around Clarence?
Right.
Which was really strange to see.
Right.
Because I don't, you know, maybe he's trying to keep his balance. You know, maybe that's part of it. I'm not really sure, like, how you would actually describe the idea. His arm is on Clarence's shoulder.
Yeah, I think when he's walking, it seems like he's trying to, I mean, it kind of looks like he's trying to carry him along, like he's walking faster than him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a little younger.
And taller. He has longer legs.
Right. That's true also.
Yeah.
So
that kind of looks like a motivation of like, look, I'm going to prove to you that, you know, I hit this thing, you know, I hit this tree. And then he gets there and.
Right. Nope. Right. Yeah. They get to the tree and they start looking around and then, you know, what's the matter? Well, you know, Clarence says, what's the matter? George goes, well, this is where I left my car and it isn't here. And Clarence goes, you have no car. Well, I had a car and it was right here. I guess someone moved it. So again, he's still in somewhat denial about what is really going on here.
Yeah, he doesn't get it.
You know, yeah, it's like, okay, someone must have moved. He's trying to think of logical reasons of why his car is not there. His car is not there because, you know, someone must have moved it. You know, he hit the tree and someone moved the car. Okay. You know, we don't know how much time has passed. So it could be something. It could be nothing. You know.
Right. Yeah.
You know, George stoops down and starts looking at the tree and is trying to figure things out. And he sounds a little drunk. With the way he's like slurring his words slightly when he says that. And then a man shows up. This is the man we saw just last week, you know, who said that this was a tree that it's the one of the oldest trees in Bedford Falls, and his great grandfather planted it. And you know, the man turns by and goes, good evening. He goes, let's say, hey, where's my car? Which is great to ask this guy. You know, it's like, maybe George thinks that this guy got his car towed because he hit the tree. You know, and he goes, I beg your pardon? My car. I'm the fellow that owns the car that ran into your tree. What tree? What do you mean, what tree? This tree here. I ran into it. You know, George is very confused here. You know, he's sure of something, but now he's starting to question it.
Right.
You know, is he drunk? Is he thinking about like what's it's very, and I love the way that we get to see Clarence here, who's just so amused at watching this entire back and forth between George and this man. Because, you know, Clarence completely understands what's going on. George doesn't yet.
Right.
You know, so it's just done really, really well the way that the two of them are both responding differently to the exact same situation based on what each of them perceive to know, I guess you can say, of that. And that's actually the way this minute ends, by the, you know, this man stooping down a little bit and trying to look at his tree. And tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more about that. Is there anything else you had for this minute, Dana?
No. I did not.
Okay. Every Wednesday, we have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday, where the idea is that ever since this movie came out 77 years ago, there have been so many movies, TV shows, a lot of different media that we've touched upon some of them over the last few weeks, which basically take the basic premise of this movie, adapt it to something else, to see what would happen if a character no longer existed. Like, how would that affect things? How would that move things along? So this week, I actually decided to pick something that, because you, like me, are a child of the 80s. So I decided to pick a TV show from the 1980s that actually deals with, that has an episode that deals with something similar. Do you remember the TV show, The Facts of Life?
Of course.
All right. So towards the end of the run of the Facts of Life, in their final season, which no longer had Mrs. Garrett, they had like her sister, who was, you know, played by Clarice Leachman, played her sister, Beverly Ann. So she was the, I guess, house mother, even though everyone has sort of grown up and they're no longer in high school. They're just still all living in the same house. And so there was an episode where she actually feels, Beverly Ann, that, you know, it's Christmas time and nobody really needs her and nobody wants her around. Everyone's making their own plans. So she basically says, I'm not even needed here. I wonder what would happen if they didn't have me around and stuff like that. And then Santa appears and decides to show her what would have happened to everyone if she wasn't there. You know, because at the beginning of this episode, so we have Blair, who's the rich one. You know, she is trying to actually make an investment, but because Beverly Ann is on the phone, so she doesn't get to make that phone call, and Blair gets upset about that. And then Beverly Ann told her that she shouldn't be investing, but, you know, Blair then listened to her. And then Tootie, which is Kim Fields, was on her way to go meet her fiance's mother, and so she gave her some advice about that. But she didn't want to listen to her. And then Natalie was given a jacket that Beverly Ann fixed because it had ripped. So she gave it to her when she was on her way to go run some errands. And then there was a character named Andy, who was a child that Beverly Ann adopted. That, you know, he said that he's going to be going to visit someone else for Christmas. He's not going to be around. And then Joe wanted to go out in the weather. It was bad weather, and she wanted to go somewhere, and she wanted to take her motorcycle, and Beverly Ann actually gave her a car to do it. But, you know, she basically felt that she doesn't need to be around. So in this dream sequence, I guess you can call it, or the It's a Wonderful Life sequence, when she doesn't exist, so what happens to every one of them is something bad because Beverly Ann wasn't there to intervene and help them. So Blair ended up losing her fortune because of this bad investment that she wanted to make, that Beverly Ann wanted to stop her from doing. Tootie ended up breaking up with her fiance because the meeting just went really bad because she didn't have Beverly Ann's advice on how to deal with it. Natalie didn't have the fixed sweater, so she ended up being in a bank that was robbed. And then the police come and arrest her because she was wearing the exact same outfit as the robbers were. Which, you know, if she would have been wearing the sweater, the jacket, that she wouldn't have looked exactly like them. What else? Then Andy, who wouldn't have been adopted by her, and therefore he was living in an orphanage and was being bullied all the time. And then the saddest thing that happens is that Joe, because she wasn't able to borrow Beverly Ann's RV, she ended up getting into a motorcycle accident because the weather was so bad when she was on her way to things. And, you know, Beverly Ann, at the end of this episode, comes to realize how great it is that she's there and that she deserves to be there instead of Mrs. Garrett. So it's an interesting way to look at It's a Wonderful Life from the perspective of the facts of life. But whatever. It's this show was on its last legs at this point anyway. You know, this episode aired December 12th, 1987. And this was the 10th episode of the final season. You know, the final season ended up having, I think, 24 episodes. So there was only 14 more episodes that were going. This was the end. This was their last thing. I mean, the show was even moved to Saturday nights from Wednesday at this point. You know, people just weren't watching it as much as they were beforehand. So, yeah, that's you don't by any chance remember that episode, do you?
It kind of rang a bell, actually.
You know, whenever a bell rings, it means another angel gets in the way.
Exactly. Yeah, I do think I probably saw that, but I forgot about that show. But I have a lot of shows in the recesses of my brain. My grandmother used to tell me I watched too much TV, and then I became a television producer, and then I became a filmmaker. I said, "See, it all fed into what I did. It wasn't too much TV." So I do think.
Wow, that's great. Did your grandmother you know, live to see you you know, reap rewards from watching all that TV in the 80s and know that you became
Yes.
something of it?
Yes, she definitely did, and she laughed when I would call her on it. It was very, very funny. And it's kind of her fault too, because I used to sleep over her house on Saturday nights, and we would watch The Love Boat every single we also watched All in the Family, The Love Boat, and then Fantasy
Fantasy
Island would
Island.
come on after.
Of course.
But I was too that she drew the line at Fantasy Island. It was too late, so I got to watch The Love Boat
Right.
and other things.
I remember at my grandparents' house, they wouldn't let us watch The Love Boat. They were like, no, that's too racy for you to watch, you know, for as kids. You know, now I watch it and I laugh, but whatever. That's you know,
Yes.
the difference of when you're 10 and when you're 50. You know,
Yes.
things are a
Well, I
little.
thought Fantasy Island, when I did sneak it, was very scary. I think that's another reason not to watch it before bed. I thought it was a little
Okay.
scary.
All right. I can understand that. I can sort of understand that. You know, especially for a little kid, you know, seeing Tattoo, that might be a little scary also. All right. So, Dana, you want to tell people where they can find Dana Nachman?
Sure. Well, I have a website. It's dananachman.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I haven't really been doing X, but I guess I could try. but yeah, all those places, just with my name, you can find me.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Mover Up Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, moverupminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.